I know, I say this every time I come here because it's always the first week of the month and it's already July. It's a holiday week, so we'll try and keep this short because I know there's a lot going on.
Right.
And we were talking about festivities here in Columbus. By the way, this is Mayor Jim Lineup and for the July 4th. And you have a few parades throughout the year, but not on the 4th.
Well, correct. The community has two large parades that, you know, walk through the downtown area. On the 4th of July, we've got some neighborhoods that have parades. Mead Village, I think, has probably got one of the longest running parades going, 45 years or so. The place where I live, Forest Park, will have a parade. It's not quite as long, maybe 40 years of length, but we'll do those during the day. So the neighborhoods sort of have their little party, and then one of the local radio stations will have a fireworks display in the evening, and that sort of caps off the holiday for us. Yeah.
So I always dig into the Republic before I come here just to make sure I don't miss anything, and just want to get your take on this article about a homeowner running an auto repair shop out of their home in dispute with the city. Yeah. I didn't really read the article, but I can only imagine what this is. You have a homeowner that wants to do something that maybe is not necessarily zoned for that.
Correct, yeah. You know, what we're trying to do is find a homogeneous neighborhood, or at least a neighborhood where people can live who have sort of similar interests. And the point being that if I want to live in a residential area, I'd like to be surrounded by other residences. If I don't mind living in a commercial area, well then, you know, I don't mind that. And so we've got a residential area, and there's certain activities that are appropriate for residents and not appropriate for residents. And we've had a number of complaints from neighbors about some of the activities that are going on here. I got to be a little cautious about how I describe them because I don't know really where this is headed. But what the newspaper article talked about was that, you know, there's what appears to be an auto repair activity underway there. And you know, we would think that that's a non-conforming use, and so it should cease, and we'll see where it goes. Yeah, but they came forward. Our code enforcement officer came before the Board of Works a week ago at this point, came with the property owners who were appealing his determination that what they were doing was outside the rules, and the Board of Works upheld the code enforcement officer, and so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Something that would be settled more, it sounds like a dispute maybe for legal type action.
Most likely.
So we did a story a week ago or so about the opening of the new substance abuse treatment center. It's an acronym. I think it's called TASC.
Right. And Substance Center.
Yeah.
Treatment and Support Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that opened July 1st, just a couple days ago. They had an open house last week.
Correct.
And it's different in that there's no waiting room. As soon as you get there, they want to get you into groups right away so you don't have time to double think and maybe leave before someone actually sees you. So they're thinking about innovative ways. And I know that this has to be something that, you know, we've talked about so many times this last couple years, that you have to really be pleased to see this happening.
Oh, we're really excited. I mean, what part of what we've talked about is that in our community, in any community, there must be multiple pathways to recovery. You know, there can't be a one-size-fits-all or a one solution, you know, for everybody. And so we have tried to encourage faith-based solutions, tried to encourage, you know, some of the volunteer or even the for-profit institutions that have come around. This seems to be a little bit of a mix of the two. I mean, it's a partnership with Columbus Regional Health and a provider. And yet it's just another approach to try to arrange some kind of recovery from substance abuse. And so, you know, part of what they're also trying to do is take advantage of the situation when a person is ready. You know, part of what I've read and been taught is that when it comes to addiction recovery, the addict needs to be ready, needs to want to have this happen. And so you've got a person who's come in your door, and that's expressed a physical expression of the fact that they're ready, and we want to take advantage of that. So yeah, we're kind of excited that it's here. It's, like I say, one more pathway to recovery, and hopefully it'll be a good model that we can share with others.
And it's a regional center too, I believe 8 or 10 even counties
right.
that they serve, and it's grant funded. I also read about, is it ASAP Hub? That's on track for an August opening, and then the city is funding a jail drug addiction treatment program coordinator too.
Again, it's multiple pathways to recovery. The whole notion with respect to ASAP and the hub is that you've got people who just need a little bit of guidance. I mean, you know, if you think about it, folks who are suffering from substance abuse, addictive type disorders, not necessarily aware of the environment that they're in terms of where they can go for some a little bit of assistance. And what we want to be able to do at the hub is provide what we call a navigator, which is a fancy word for, we'll just help you work through this. You know, we can help you pick out a pathway that makes sense for you or for a loved one. I mean, you wouldn't have to be the addict that shows up at the hub. I mean, you might be a parent or a sibling or a friend. You know, you might have, somebody you know who needs some assistance, and you might need some advice on how best to make that happen. So the hub is supposed to help people tie it all together. The other one that you mentioned, the treatment facility within the jail, again, this is for people who are, prepared to accept some help. You know, again, they've raised their hand and said, I'd like to participate in some kind of an activity like this. And so we want to be poised, we want to be ready, you know, to meet them where they are when they're ready. And so that's the idea behind trying to do some of that work in the jail.
Yeah, and this is not a story that's unfamiliar in other cities we go to. We're seeing this in Kokomo and Bloomington. And so I know this is kind of maybe putting you on the spot, but is there any data that's out there that suggesting, you know, that maybe these things are starting to take effect and helping?
We have some good data, good from the standpoint that they show an improvement in some of the characteristics we're looking for. I mean, property crime is down, the number of admittances at the hospital, in the hospital emergency room relative to overdoses, the number of overdose deaths are down. It's a little too early for me to say that I can draw a direct line between ASAP and that, but those numbers are pointed in the right direction. But I would caution everybody to understand that even though they're down, they're not down enough. I mean, they're not where they need to be. I've asked the folks who are going to run ASAP for us to give some thought to what kind of metrics, you know, are we really after here? Because there will come a time, 2 years out, where we're going to want to understand the efficiency of some of these programs and begin to make some choices about which pathways, you know, are meaningful enough, which ones work, and maybe which pathways don't, and adjust our approach. But so far the preliminary information we have is good. It's making a difference.
I wanted to get also kind of on a health-related question about where I saw Columbus Regional Health are urging officials or city council to include e-cigs in the smoking ordinance, yeah, too, and we're seeing more of that. What's in the current ordinance right now in Columbus?
Well, the current ordinance talks about cigarettes and cigars, and I'm blanking on how they explain it, but it's something that you smoke that emits smoke. And basically what it says is that you can't have that in any kind of public accommodation or within 10 feet of the entry to a public accommodation. So, and when we use the word public or phrase a public accommodation, we're referring to a business, could be a restaurant, could be a bar, could be a factory, you know, some place that the public typically comes into. And the Columbus Regional and their folks have asked us to expand the definition of from cigarettes to include the e-cigarettes or the vaping. And what we want to do is just try to understand, you know, what the effect that might have on these public accommodations that I talked about. You know, do the proprietors care? If so, do they care? How much do they care? Kind of a thing. Because we have a real interest in trying to protect the public. That's the whole notion behind this in the first place, is to restrict the areas where people can just gratuitously emit smoke. And so if we make the further step to include e-cigarettes or vaping, you know, what will that, how much smoke will that cut down upon, and what other effects might it have on a particular business? So we'll go through maybe a month or two here where we're trying to gather some data, talk to some people, and then I suspect the city council will consider it, you know, later in the fall.
I wanted to get an update on the convention center. The last time there was a tour of prospective architects, developers, and then you were asking for a request for qualifications.
Correct.
So, and from what I heard, you had a few come in.
Oh, we had 11. Yeah. 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 We were pretty excited about the number and the quality of the people who responded to the RFQ. And so we had telephone interviews with all those. I mean, we read through the written submissions that they had. Then we did telephone interviews with all of them, and we've reduced the number now down to 4. And those folks will be asked to submit proposals. We'll issue what's called an RFP, which is like the next step. They'll be given a couple of months to prepare their RFPs, and I want to say those will be due back here either the end of August or the 1st of September. There's a date out there. I can't remember which one the group chose. But from that, we'll have on-site interviews and make a decision about where we go.
Is there a timeline right now for this? Or do you feel like you're on a timeline, you're on time, or is there really, it's just kind of...
Well, it's our own time. You know, it's whatever timeline we choose. So if we wish to adjust it, we can. But like I said, we have expected the request for proposals to be returned to us. It's either the end of August or the 1st of September. It's, you know, the last week in August or the first week in September. We're trying to be a little cautious of the Labor Day holiday just to make sure we work that correctly. And then we'll take a couple of weeks to review the proposals. As I said, we'll conduct some in-person interviews. And then we'll probably be making a decision about who to work with sometime around the end of September.
And you said maybe. We. So is there a group for the convention center?
Yeah, we've got a work group that comprises some folks out of the Heritage Fund, you know, that had put on the Envision Columbus program. The ultimate decision will be made by the Redevelopment Commission because it's sort of their ground and their area, you know, that we're working with. And so the Heritage Funds group will make a recommendation to the Redevelopment Commission, who will then make a decision. And if you think about it in those terms, I mean, they typically meet the third week of every month. So my guess is it'll be October, you know, before we get through that.
Will there be any time for public input during that time too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll have a couple of public sessions where the public will be given an opportunity to come in and see just what the proposals show and weigh in on which ones they like.
And then funding mechanisms to fund the construction and then the development of the convention center, is that in place, or are you waiting to see?
Waiting to see, yeah. You know, there's a couple of variables that we sort of need the developers to answer for us. I mean, we've offered them, we've asked them to take a look at two parcels, one that is north of the jail across 2nd Street, north of the jail, and one that is east of the jail across Lafayette Street. So they have to sort of tell us which one that they'd like. They've got to tell us how ambitious a project they want to build. You know, we've given them some parameters in terms of, say, 140 hotel rooms and a 9,000 square foot ballroom, that kind of stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to fund the vast majority of this, and they're going to own it and operate it. So, you know, they have to build something that works for them. And we haven't seen that yet. So it's a little early for us to try to comment on, you know, what our participation will be and how we'll fund it.
We had an email from Michael. He wanted to know what planning initiatives is the mayor, the city council, making to address likely increased rainfall and flooding as predicted by climate scientists, particularly given the flooding history.
Yeah, flooding history.
Well, it comes at a good time when we've had lots of rain and thunderstorms these past few months.
We have, following the 2008 flood, we undertook a significant analysis and review of activities throughout the community. And basically came away with two things. We've got some gauges now that will give us a little bit more warning before a flood comes. Instead of maybe an hour or 30 minutes worth of warning, we can give a couple hours or 4 hours worth of warning. Because the modeling, I think, is pretty good, you know, in terms of what's headed our way. The second thing is we revised our flood maps so that people understand, you know, which areas are more likely to flood and which ones aren't. So, you know, you can take that into account when you decide where to build or what to build. And we've taken a look at trying to clean up some of the stream banks. That's a little bit more difficult than you might think. The Department of Natural Resources and some of the other state or federal agencies that regulate that area are pretty protective of what they consider to be a natural type of occurrence. So, I mean, you look at some of those streams and you may see a fallen tree in there and think, well, that's an obstruction. You know, that might increase the water backup. Truth of the matter is, it's pretty easy for the water to overtop that. The engineers that we work with tell us that that's not that big a deal, that it really has no effect on the flooding that might occur. So we've continued to take a look at it because we know the community is very sensitive to the effect the water has, and we know we're surrounded, or at least on three sides. That there's some kind of phrase out there, you know, I'm surrounded on three sides, but we know that we have an issue with that, and we continue to monitor it.
Yeah, and I'm hearing more and more, I Mayor Buttigieg, he's in the news lately. I don't know why for some reason, but I've just heard him talk about these 100-year floods that are happening, or two, you know, in South Bend since he's been, you know, there. And of course, you covering weather, you hear about, well, this hasn't flooded in 50 years. I mean, are you hearing that too here?
I don't hear too much of that. I mean, most everything we have is designed to withstand a 100-year flood. As I said, we revised the flood maps a few years ago to show the 500-year level. And again, I think that's been helpful in many cases, allowing people to sort of figure out where to go and, by extension, where not to go.
One more question from Michael. Is Columbus actively considering installing solar in a matter that's been done in North Vernon? It was great to hear that BCSC is planning to install solar. How about the city?
We're taking a look at solar, particularly with respect to city utilities and the wastewater treatment plant, but a little too soon to say for sure what we're going to be able to do.
Thanks, Michael. And anyone that liked is listening to this can send your questions at news@indianapublicmedia.org. So I know there's some big projects, and we don't need to go through all of them, but I think you have an update on the Fair Oaks Mall.
Yeah, as most in the community would know, the City of Columbus, in partnership with Columbus Regional Hospital, purchased the mall. We've retained a site consultant, somebody to help us figure out how best to develop the plan. We have a vision. We know what we'd like to do out there, some of the features we'd like to incorporate, but we also want to listen to the public and see what thoughts and comments they may have. And so beginning, I think there's two or three of these scheduled. The first one will be July 11th, 6 p.m. at the mall. We'll just invite the public to come out and share with us whatever thoughts they may have on how best to use the space.
And Exhibit Columbus announcing an opening party.
Right.
I guess why not? It's becoming bigger and bigger every year. What's that all about, and are you getting excited? It's coming up.
Right. I want to say August 24th, but don't hold me to that. Mm-hmm. But 2 years ago, we had a very large tent in Millrace Park. I think we had about 700 people in attendance, and it was just a great way to kick off the event. Attracted a lot of attention. We had a lot of visitors from throughout the state and surrounding states, and so we're going to do that again this year. We think that this is going to be exciting. I mean, we've got a new way to look at some of the iconic buildings that we have here, maybe a new way to engage people in terms of how to appreciate the built environment that we have. And so we're kind of excited to see what this year's exhibit will bring.